Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew.
How are you doing?
Going, James?
Oh, I'm supposed to say, how's it going, Drew?
I'm changing things up.
Oh, no. I'm fine. Thank you. Very good. Right,
that's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. So we got a pretty interesting week happening last week.
Yeah.
Do you want to jump into that right away?
Or well,
do
first we
want to talk a little?
If you've listened to the show before, there's going to be new music that you haven't heard before.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
We have some news in that department. There's new music.
You just heard it. If I did the editing right, you just heard the music.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this music. James, where did we get it from?
Our friend Johanna went to the Indie Game Revolution in Seattle a couple weeks ago. And so this is a bunch of indie games. You know, check them out. See how they are. Check out. And there was actually a guy from Vancouver there because his music is in one of the games. So his band is called A Shell in the Pit. And she heard this song in the background. She thought, oh, that's a cool song. And it found out, oh, this guy's from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. Great. Great nice. Tie-in. And we were looking for music.
Mm-hmm.
It had been a bit tough to find something that might have fit our sort of like aesthetic. If you listen to the outro of the show, there's a very, that music is actually generated by a computer, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But in this sense, we have a real artist, and this music actually is from a game. The music is called Green Green Grass, and we'll actually link to the show or link to the music on every show notes so people can find it if they want to check it out.
But yeah, so that's the band, I guess, is A Shell in the Pit, and the game, I don't know if you've checked it out. It still looks like it's a work in progress, or there are some updates, but it looks like it should be pretty fun to play, and it sounds to me like the music is pretty game-like.
Yeah, it's definitely game-like. And so the game is actually called Parkitech, and it's a sort of a business simulation game, and that's like sort of like SimCity or whatever, but there's construction and management of theme parks, so it's like, what was that game that you probably played in the 90s? Roller Coaster Tycoon. Yeah, something cool like that. And that was actually, it was funded on Kickstarter, and so they will link to the game as well, to the actual game itself, to the band, as well as the music. So, yeah. Thanks for... It's giving us that music and let us using it.
Yeah, that's really sweet. So it sounds like we got some good community stuff for community, by the community, in the community.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, let's do meetups around town.
Meetups around town. Okay, so we had a pretty awesome week last week. I don't know about you, James, but I didn't make it out to nearly as many events as I wanted to. There's a huge lineup, I thought, of interesting things to go to. And I really, but I did go to a couple that I really enjoyed. How about you?
I went to exactly zero.
Exactly zero.
I tried to go to that React one that we mentioned last week. And it was, I think it was at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock or something. And I think at 4 o'clock, I got an email from a client saying, hey, our site's down. There's something wrong. And of course, third party API, something goes wrong. And of course, the site is not loading properly now because their API changed.
Right.
So now the site's busted. Great.
And so you were worried that there wasn't going to be internet?
Well, I didn't know how long it was going to take to fix this issue. So it's like, oh my God. So I just skipped it. I was like, you know, that was a shame, but that's only happened once.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't happen all the time, but when it happens, it's a pain.
That's too bad. Something I've noticed that I'm actually guilty of myself, and I probably should stop it as much as possible, is signing up or, you know, RSVPing for meetups with intent to go.
Yeah,
and then not going and not updating my RSVP.
Yeah, after saying things like, "Hey, if you sign up and don't go, it's rude." I started like saying, "No, I'm not going," because there's a wait list, and so it's like triple rude because there's people that are waiting to go on. And
absolutely, yeah. So I actually noticed that with the DevTools meetup, it was on Tuesday. I made it out. It was at Mobify. I thought it was awesome. It hit upon a lot of things that I really like.
You finally got to check out Mobify. Right?
I finally got to check out Mobify. Yep. For sure. And that was a great office. But so here was an interesting thing. They had it limited to 80, which I guess was the number of seats that they actually had for the event.
Physical seats.
Sure.
Oh.
As opposed to...
Well, just space. Everyone gets a seat if there's 80 people. If there's more, half the people have to stand or whatever.
Okay, yeah. So I guess so. I didn't count, but I kind of guess so. They had it limited to 80 people to register
On the meetup. That's quite a lot of people in that space.
And I think it would have been fine. But the other thing was it got full, and then they sent out an email to say, you know, if you aren't going to attend, please update your RSVP so people on the waiting list can come. And when I went there, I thought it was really nice that they said that because it kind of pushed me to make sure that I did go. I got there a little bit early and I realized I was really hungry and there wasn't food. So I went and grabbed something to eat and then I went back. And but it was awesome. But I noticed that, you know, it wasn't even close to full. There were maybe like 40 people or 45 people that actually showed up. So that means that, you know, 35 people out there who RSVP'd to that. I don't know how many people were on the waiting list that didn't get to go as a result of it. So there's two takeaways for this, in my opinion.
Yeah.
One, if there's a meetup you really want to go to, go. You know, and two, maybe it's nice to update your RSVPs, but at the same time, if you're going to limit, do what the airlines do and overbook.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Say your limit is 80, but then just say 100. So, hey, if half people don't show up, great. We still have.
And if 100 people show up, guess what? 20 people are standing and it's going to be kind of hot in here.
Well, we'll just we'll release the names of the people that didn't go. We'll shame them on the show.
No way.
Oh, okay.
No way. But the meetup itself was great. So it was can't think of his name, but someone from Microsoft and someone from Mozilla, and they talked about dev tools in Edge. They talked about not really dev tools in Edge per se. One of the really interesting things there. Have you played around with VS Code at all?
Visual Studio Code?
Yeah.
I think I downloaded to check it out. I didn't have it for too long. I'm not a fan of Atom. I know a lot of people love it, but that's the Electron open source editor thing. I find it slow. I use Sublime. But I tried it for a few minutes and I was like, oh, this is cool. But I didn't find a use for it.
Absolutely fair enough. I think probably Sublime has a similar feature or plugin in Atom as well. But they showed VS Code and they showed some of the tools you can use with the browser. So you know how like if you're debugging a JavaScript issue and you're kind of like you're writing in your editor and you're switching back to your Chrome or whatever your browser is, and you've got your dev tools open and you're kind of stepping through and going back to your code and back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you're getting dizzy from going back and forth all the time. Well, one of the things was they thought, you know, if we could eliminate 10%, 50% of these back and forths, that would be a huge win.
Just
so why not put
editor.
Some of these tools in the editor? And with Chrome, I guess they actually have access to some of the mapping tools
remote tools. With there are modules you can use in Node that will actually run your code in the browser.
There you go. And so,
So they're probably using something like that.
Maybe something like Chrome that. And so they can step through in their editor and it'll bring them to the line or to the break in their editor. So they,
Chrome can act as a server too. So you can plug, I plug my phone and USB into the computer and I can open the device in Chrome. Like see Chrome's Chrome, Android's Chrome in my Chrome and I can debug it that way. So you can actually
have access
device.
To the dev tools.
Yeah. And you can do that over the network too. So you can have a device on your network that has a daemon running and Chrome can connect to that and just show its contents.
Right.
As long as there's Chrome on both devices.
And so that was pretty cool. It looked pretty interesting. It had to do with having the dev tools in VS Code, I think, for that.
Yeah.
The next one was Mozilla, and they were talking about their dev tools. Something I thought was really cool, a few things I thought was really cool, was the dev tools lead is living in Victoria. I think recently he moved from Vancouver with his family. He got some kids, or a kid. Couple of small children, I think.
Yeah.
There were some pictures. So.
There's a family.
But he moved over to Victoria and he thought, you know, this is going to be a great place for me. So he's working remotely and it seems like a really cool team. But so if you've ever tried to, I don't know if you've ever tried to build Mozilla's Firefox from source.
No.
So talking about text editors, Komodo Edit by ActiveState, that's built on top of Firefox.
Oh, yeah.
And
cool.
So yeah, it's kind of interesting.
First, install Mercurial.
Yeah.
Clone it. That was the first.
Well,
I tried to build.
You know, it's like a couple hours.
I tried to build Gecko back in the day, or not Gecko. What was the one that they had? Firefox OS.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to build Firefox OS once, and it was like, first install Mercurial. I was like, okay, HG clone.
Right.
Like, what the?
I mean, you get the same thing. You get the same thing with your Go.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, cool.
But anyway, so one of the things. I remember hearing about this. Oh, yeah, you got to do this Zool, blah, blah, blah. What is Zool? What is this stuff?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It sounds Zool.
Right. Yeah. So they've been moving away from that, and they've been using – so DevTools are now built in React.
Ooh.
And they're using Redux.
Yeah.
And this means rather than having to, like, I guess, recompile or rebuild the whole – the whole browser, every time you make a change to the DevTools, mm-hmm. you can just reload that part. And so it's way faster.
Hot reloading.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, hot reloading. That's cool.
And so it looks really cool. It looks fun. It looks like they're working with some cool technologies. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was that, with Chrome, I think a lot of people are using Chrome DevTools. Mm. There's a lot of resources for doing that, and everyone's doing it, so it's kind of cool. But when you look at Firefox's tools, or you look at Edge's tools, or you look at maybe Opera's tools, I'm not sure because I haven't looked.
Yeah.
you might find that some of them do some things a little better than others. Yeah. And anyway, if you're doing any front-end development, you have multiple browsers installed, you've got to make sure things work there. Check out the tools in all of them, because you might find some things that you like for specific tasks.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good advice.
Yeah, so that was really the takeaway there. I felt like we didn't need to bring laptops. Mm-hmm. I think I did bring mine, though, anyway.
Just in case.
Yeah, but it was great. That cool. was my Tuesday.
Awesome. And then Rise Open House.
That's right. So the next day, Wednesday, I'd planned to go. There was the Docker meetup. There mm-hmm. was Van Dev meetup. There was Rise Open House. So I made the mistake, if you will, of going to an open house and having some beer.
Sure.
And meeting up Mingling. With a bunch of friends.
Yeah.
And then the next step was, go out for dinner and have some more beer.
Yeah. Beer
all day. That was a lot of fun. But Rise Open House, it was great. It was good to see some people and catch up. And they have a really interesting way of doing things. I think they have four different name tag stickers. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of shows the role that you might be looking cool. for. So it's really more for them. It's like a hiring kind of
I think they're pretty transparent about that in their notes.
Oh, they absolutely are. They absolutely are. Yeah. And that was fun. And they had good pizza as well.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. The upcoming week.
The upcoming week. So Monday, as you know, is of course, Git Help night.
Yep.
And that starts at 5. So something that I've been thinking about that, it's if it's just Git Help, who's going to show up to say, hey, I need some help with Git? Well, what do I need help with? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
So I thought it would be really cool if we kind of pushed Adam to get some themes going or actually go over different things.
Sure.
And I thought...
generalize it a little bit.
Yeah. So this time I thought we'll take a little bit of a look at some Git hooks.
Cool.
So anything like enforcing...
I love Git hooks.
Right?
Yeah.
Anything from like enforcing commit message policy to, style, coding style.
There's cool things like actions on commits. Mm-hmm. So something like GitHub, when you say fixes number 7, it actually closes an issue for you. So there's like an automation side of things you can do with Git hooks.
Yeah. So I think that'll be really cool. And it'll actually hopefully get something, just have something out of it that we could maybe post to a public repo.
Cool.
And yeah, I think that'd be fun.
Awesome.
And
all right.
It's also a pretty big day because, as you may know, it is the HackerNest.
HackerNest. Tech Social. Yeah, cool. So, Drew, as a co-organizer of HackerNest, why don't you tell us a little bit about HackerNest and who should go?
Absolutely. So HackerNest, in my opinion anyway, is Vancouver – well, not just my opinion. I think a lot of people share this opinion. It's Vancouver's premier tech meetup.
Yes.
It is the place to go if you want to talk tech with other people in the community, in a relaxed environment, have a beer, have a water if that's your thing, and just kind of chill and see what's going on. So you get to meet people from, some of the smaller companies that come out and are working on cool things. You get to talk to people you haven't seen for a while, and you get to interact with some of the bigger companies. So this month, actually, I think this quarter, SAP is a pretty big sponsor for our HackerNest organization. And there'll be some people from SAP out there to kind of let the community know about some of the positions that they have open.
Yeah, they have a huge office here in town too, right?
They do.
Yeah.
They do. And it's really nice. It's right over in the Yale Town area.
Yep.
We were going to have the event there, but there's a little bit of some limits to the number of people we can have in their event space.
Right.
And so we're actually having the event.
HackerNest
Wishpond
is too big.
Was really, I know, it's getting there.
Yeah.
Wishpond has been a great host to have as well.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have it over at Wishpond. And that's over on, 1500 West Georgia?
Yes, you got it. And so I think they're on the 11th floor?
10th floor.
Oh, close.
It's not up on the 10th floor. But don't worry, there'll be some signage and people on the first floor to meet, greet you, and let you in.
Yeah.
And that'll be great. So I'm really looking forward to it. And that's from 8 p.m.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's jump to Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, first event, open coffee, right in the morning, 8 a.m., Nelson
Siegel.
So it's
going to be kind of tough to go to Hacker Nest and then go to open coffee.
Yeah,
but again, I'm going to make it a little bit of an effort, but I'm not going to bother RSVPing because I don't think I'm going
to
make it.
Yeah, so I've been to open coffee once, and it was a pretty cool little event. There was a couple of people there. It wasn't a huge event, at least the time that I went. I always try to stipulate that because I've only been to one, so I can only speak about the one time I went.
Right.
There was about five or six people there. Got to chat with every single one of them. Nice. And had some really nice coffee. Had a nice Americano.
That's pretty cool. So, yeah. Were people working on their laptops or showing code or doing anything like that?
No, they're really just relaxing before work started. Okay. You know, it's 8 a.m., so they're sort of there. You know, it's their first stop on their way to work. You know, if they work in Gastown or they're going a little bit out of their way just for an hour to chat with people and see what's going on and then head to work.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, that's usually my my podcast time these days. I go for a walk and listen to a podcast. And
yeah.
I like it. Yeah. Gets me in the right mood to to start coding.
But, yeah, cool.
So there's also at noon over at Brain Station, 110 Hamilton, there's a lunch and learn. How to nail your coding interview and land that job at Google.
Cool.
I think it's kind of interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they say and what they talk about. And I think Google is kind of famous for their, you know, their coding interviews or their job interviews and the style of what they're looking for. What do you think, James?
I think it's pretty cool. I actually heard that they stopped doing some of their weirder questions in their interviews because now that they're ubiquitous, they're known. It's kind of like, oh, well, the person just knows the answer. They're not necessarily challenges anymore. Unless they've come up with new ones and they haven't really got out there in the ecosystem. Yeah. Well, they used to ask the one about why are manhole covers round and stuff like that. But now it's like a common thing because there's like videos on YouTube. Five interview questions at Google that you need to know. So I think that they've switched that a little bit. And I think as, you know, the ecosystem moves forward, they're asking different questions. So I think it is still important to know how to be a good interviewee because sometimes you have a bad interviewer. I think you've mentioned that before where you've had an interviewer talking to you and it was like, this is weird. This doesn't make sense. But you had to take initiative and tell them about yourself.
Nothing particularly comes to mind, but I think that probably does happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it may be the case. I just can't remember.
I think it was someone else.
Were you talking to me? Yeah, no, maybe. Well, I think that I think the interview process is really important. And I think that something to always keep in mind in an interview is that it's both ways. Like the person looking for work.
Yeah.
Here's an interview question that I really dislike. Yeah. Why do you want to work with us? You know why?
I want money.
No, I just dislike the question because that's assuming that the interviewer has passed the interview. I might not want to work with you yet.
Sure.
But how the next hour goes may determine that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's, I think that's really interesting. So oftentimes, and something that I really dislike as well, is that interviews consist of a couple of people in a room that nobody ever goes to talking about things that nobody ever does at that job.
Yeah.
If an interview is not an open door into the culture of that company and what that work is like, then what is it?
Yeah, I've interviewed a few people before for positions, and obviously I do most of the hiring as far as the technical people go at our place.
Right.
Even when it comes to contractors and stuff, I try to treat it as a conversation. Like, tell me about how you work, not what you work on.
Yeah.
Because if I know how you work, I can influence what you work on quite a bit.
Right.
If you don't know a tool, and I can understand that you have the ability to learn or you want to learn, the most important thing to me is, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
Because if they say, well, I hate PHP and front-end development, well, I'm like, well, you might not be a good fit here. So well, if you love learning and love, you know, I asked, actually, I was interviewing a guy the other day and I asked him, oh, are you interested in testing? And he said, yeah, actually, I am interested in testing. You know, I'd like to get into that. And so that's something that I've been trying to get into. I'm not an expert by any stretch, but I am a novice at testing. And so asking another person, hey, are you into testing? Because like maybe he is or the person is. And they know a lot more than me. I can suck up their knowledge, or we can learn together on something.
Right.
So that was the questions that I asked. I also found I actually had another guy fresh out of college. This is when we had our physical office. Came to the office. There's a college down the street. I won't name the college, but the guy came in and I was talking to him and I sort of had a little list of things. You know, Git. Right. You know this, know this, know this. I said, yeah, why don't you tell me about your experience with these different tools? He's like, well, what do you want to know? It's like, I just asked you, tell me about the experience with these different tools. And it was like pulling teeth.
Right.
Like I had to really like, I want to hire someone. You're making it very difficult for me to pay you to do something.
Right.
Which is strange. And so, yeah. I definitely, and I actually complained to the school about that.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. So I actually, I don't know if you know, but I spent a little over 3 years working in corporate human resources, particularly in the interviewing department. And we interviewed approximately 15,000 people per quarter.
Wow.
And about one third of those people got the job. And there were a couple of really important things going into the interviews. So we wanted people who had interviewed, we wanted to make sure that as an interviewer, we were really making the environment, really making the environment, encouraging the interviewee to do their best.
Yeah.
So that not only would they show the best that they could do in the interview, but they would leave feeling like they'd had a fair shot, they'd done a good job, and they also were left with a good impression of that company going forward. And I felt like we really had a very streamlined and interesting process. And it was interesting. So we'd also have, we'd show up at various offices throughout the country with sealed envelopes of some of the interview questions we'd have.
Oh, yeah?
Within 5 minutes of having gone through a first interview, these were already posted online.
Wow.
Because people remembered the questions, they'd post them.
Yeah.
It was kind of a big deal, right? So we really had to, we had this, you know, confidential security tape.
And
have, tape over your mobile phone cameras and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty fun. But anyway, going back to the point is to make people feel like they've done their best. That's, I think, the pretty hard part, but it also helped them do that.
Yeah, I think that also lends. So you're sort of saying that you should treat the interview process as an interviewer, as almost a sales pitch for the company yourself.
Absolutely.
Hey, we do this. We do this.
Well, absolutely.
It'd be great if you worked here. This is what it'd be like. Now, tell me about you.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that giving someone a fair shot, and you know, some people. What do you think of the coding interview, for example?
I think it can be helpful, but. I'm not a huge fan. I'd rather just see code that they've written before, although that's maybe a contrived environment that I'm asking them to see.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have anything on GitHub,
mm-hmm.
I'm usually a little bit like, like, why is that? Like, you can't push any, not even a personal project.
Right.
And if they don't have any personal projects whatsoever, that sort of, to me, is like a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you probably aren't doing this in your free time. You're probably not interested in working beyond the set hours that we have as far as like, hey, if I just worked on Friday. This is a good Friday. I worked there just because I had something to do. I had to get it done. Like, and when you're on salary, you're not necessarily counting hours. I'm grading your output.
Mm-hmm.
If your output is diminished or less than someone else, the person next to you, for the same cost, I'm going to go with the person that's passionate and shows their work and is about that.
It's kind of interesting. I heard some people talking about, when as an employer, when you're asking in an interview, you know, can I see some of the open source projects that you've worked on? What you're really asking is, show me the work that you do outside of work hours.
Sure.
but I feel the same way. Like it's a passion for some people and not for others.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to find I enjoy people who are passionate about coding.
Yeah, I think so as well. That's not to say that, you know, it is a job.
Yeah,
it's a lot of people, it is a job. They have families and stuff outside of work, and they want to do something else, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that archiving your work for the public to see gives you it gives you a reason to make it better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it gives you a reason to improve. So if I have I have a project out there and it's got a bunch of errors in it,
Well,
what's wrong with this person? Especially if it's a new project. It's like,
Well, the same thing there. I mean, then it gives you something to talk about.
Sure.
You know, and if they can explain why or, you know, have some justification for that, it might, you know, I just cloned
this
from somebody else and I'm
too.
Fixing up their errors.
I like that too. Like, tell me why you did it this way.
Yeah.
Because then maybe because the code doesn't always speak to the environment that it was built in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, hey, well, yeah, we had this third-party API. It was all messed up. It came in as XML. I had to transform it. Now these properties, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. That tells me a lot more than, you know, a call to an API.
Right.
That tells me so much more than just, oh yeah, I know how to use an API. Not only that, I know how to build an application with something else that's busted.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, we kind of go on a tangent there, but let's move along.
All right. And then we have the Tech Vancouver meetup.
Yeah. Speaking of RSVPing, I have RSVP'd to this and paid my $10.
So that's pretty interesting. They've got a $10 in advance or $20 cash at the door. So you actually have RSVP'd to this. What's this all about?
Yeah, the Tech Vancouver meetup is sort of new. It sort of started in Toronto. The last one that was a couple months ago, or last month, was at Unbounce.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a bunch of presentations around. And that's actually where I met Jonathan Narvi, previous guest on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I met him there. and we talked about, you know, BetaKit and stuff like that. But that was sort of a meetup mingle event, as well as a couple of presentations.
Yeah.
One of the guys from Pikatik, the founder, he was the one who talked, I can't remember his name, but he talked about his startup and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this one actually has more presentations.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of people speaking. One of the guys from Lighthouse Labs, actually, Jeremy Shackey. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah.
There's a guy from Biotab, Eastside Games, Bench, A Place for Mom, which is a, I'm guessing, a new startup. I haven't heard of that before. But yeah, there's definitely a bunch of stuff here. There's networking, food, everything. It's great.
Sounds like it. It'll probably be pretty cool. So then there's also, and that's at 6 o'clock, by the way,
mm-hmm.
6 o'clock at the Deloitte Learning Center, 1055 yeah. Dunsmuir Street. It's the Bentall Center, Building 4. Okay.
Cool.
And there's another one at 6 o'clock as well, Kickstart. Unit 2061 at 88 West Pender. So that's actually, if you go into International Village there,
mm-hmm.
there's a, you go up the escalator, there's a cat cafe. It's called Cat Fay.
Is that the new one? Is that's new, right?
Like about a year or something. Oh,
okay,
like
yeah.
But, well, yeah, I mean, relatively new, I guess. So it's just down the hall from that.
Sure.
And that is the Vancouver Business Network.
Yeah.
What's this about?
So I thought this one was interesting. It says how to grow your business without blowing it up,
mm-hmm.
which can be really important. If
so
you're not...
I'm gonna call this on this one. I don't think this belongs in our group, or in our podcast.
Yeah, I think I thought about that too. And I mean, I've said this before, sort of, if you're not someone that's very strong on your business side,
mm-hmm.
it, no matter how strong of a developer you are or how strong of a technical person you are,
mm-hmm.
these are skills that are important to make your company successful. So I struggle
sure.
with this all the time. Like,
sure.
how do I run
that's...
a business appropriately as mm-hmm. someone who's technical? Because I like building stuff and making things.
Right.
But when it comes to running the business, if I don't do it properly,
mm-hmm.
I'm not only am I out of a job, but so is my staff.
I can understand that. But I just don't think it belongs. So I actually wanted to bring up this idea. What do you think about every time that we go over the This Week in meetups or the meetups around town, we have one meetup that's outside of our normal focus of meetups, and then we can kind of go about that. And so
okay.
it might be, you know, it
sure.
might be something like, you know what, I really like ramen. There's this ramen meetup
sure.
group that I want to talk about. Or, you know what, I'm really interested in this business thing.
Sure.
There's this business thing I want to talk about. And then we have like the justification to pull it in. What do you think?
Sure. I think that sounds really cool, actually.
So I'll say that this week, that's this one.
Okay, cool. One thing actually about this one.
Yep.
Is I know that we talked a bit about pricing and paying for events
mm-hmm.
and sort of, you know, what's the deal with that? What do you get? This one says that if you don't like this event,
yeah.
you get 100% of your money back. No quabbles, no nothing. Just we'll give you back your money.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
So I thought that was cool because we've talked before about, you know, having to pay for something and is it worth it or why are you paying? This one says pay, you know, that also helps with RSVPs, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Pay, but if you don't like it, we'll just give you your money back.
Just because of that, I'm more interested in going.
Sure.
That's kind of
cool.
interesting.
Yeah.
Right. And then, so from 6 to 8 p.m., so a pretty similar time overlap mm-hmm. there, but over on West Broadway
yeah.
at Red Academy,
mm-hmm.
there's this Learn HTML and CSS event.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. So I am a TA at Red Academy, and so they do have a bunch of courses on this different type of stuff, but this one's open to anyone that wants to show up and check out HTML and CSS.
Awesome. And then there's the Clojure Hack Night. So I think I'm actually going to make an effort to go out to the Clojure Hack Night
mm-hmm.
and play around with some Clojure and maybe build something out because it just seems like it's a really awesome meetup group
yeah.
and it would be fun to go.
Would you bring your laptop?
Clojure. I would definitely bring my laptop. So I would bring my laptop on Tuesday if I were going to the Clojure Hack Night, if I were going to Red Academy to learn HTML and CSS.
Cool.
And I would also, you know what, I would bring my laptop to Open Coffee as well.
Okay, cool.
Personally.
Yeah. If you have something to show, definitely you're going to need it, unless you like showing someone a small phone screen.
Yeah,
that can
exactly.
be kind of annoying.
Exactly.
But
plus,
yeah.
I might be on my way to work.
True. Yeah, you're going to have it anyway.
And then we have Wednesday. So Wednesday, we have this Vancouver Plural Site group. They actually have, like we see this every week, they have
yeah.
these awesome workshop type events, and this is building applications with React and Flux. Looks amazing. Have you been out to any of their... meetups?
This was the one I missed because I had a late night service call. So I was planning on going to this. I was getting ready and then I got an email saying, hey, things are busted. So I stayed
yeah.
home.
So I haven't either. Does look awesome. Definitely want to go there. If you've been, let us know how it was.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. And then we have this Learn Data Science. So this is, well, This is a really cool reading group. I haven't done the reading, so I'm probably not going to make it out. But it is, for all of us, I guess, it's a long weekend. So I might try and do that reading, but I've got a bunch of other things to catch up on. The really cool thing here is the reading was all about the algorithms for mastering the game of Go.
Yeah.
So really diving deep into Go.
This is very current, mm-hmm. as far as if you spent any time on the internet in the last couple of months, you know that right. Google has their Go, what's it called? Something Go?
I don't know.
Their GoBot thing, and it plays Go, and it AlphaGo. That's what it's called.
AlphaGo. Right.
So yeah. They have AlphaGo challenging these masters of the game Go. It's not Go the language, the Google language. It's Go the game, this right. old ancient game.
Paduk
massively more complicated than chess. Mm-hmm. Massively more complicated.
Exponentially yeah. more complicated.
Yeah, so they're beating this person. They're beating this expert in Go with their AlphaGo. Yeah. Yeah, so very, very current. Cool. Mm-hmm. It's only a 20-page PDF, so you can whip through it pretty quickly.
Yeah, 20 pages of pretty condensed material.
Yes, very dense material, yeah.
All right, and then that's going to be over at the SFU downtown at Harbor Center, 515 West Hastings from 6 p.m. Yeah, that should be pretty awesome. Then we've got this full indie meetup, 911 West Pender Street at 6 p.m., and I think that'll be a lot of fun as well. Have you been out to any of the full indie meetups?
No, actually, I haven't heard of this before.
Oh, okay. So this is like a Vancouver indie games
cool.
meetup. This is over at the Butcher and Bullock. So expect to go in and order yourself some beer and have a pretty good time there. So that's from 6 p.m. Talks start at 7 p.m. and then networking begins at 7:45 p.m. Bring your games. It's a great place to get feedback. So usually people have, when they give their talks, I think you bring your laptop, you give a talk, you plug into a projector, you show off your game, and it looks like a really cool, relaxed environment. If you're interested at all in games development, check it out.
Cool. Then we have Intro to UX Design.
Yeah. So where's that at?
That's at Red Academy.
At Red Academy. So you've been, how many times have you been out there as a TA?
Two now, actually. I'm not technically supposed to start until April because I just took over. Some people couldn't show up or they were sick or something, so I just took their spots in March.
Tends to happen. Yeah. So what do you think of the general layout, the feel, the vibe? Is this something, if I want to jump into an intro to UX design, would this be the place to go?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually went to one of the first times I went to Red Academy was for a UX presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool because they actually interacted with the crowd a lot. Like they asked questions like... They ask questions in a way that you basically had to answer. It's like, hey, you over there, what do you think of this, this, and this? And people would answer. So there's a lot of crowd interaction, which was cool.
That's kind of interesting.
As well as like little games and little assignments that they sort of gave groups of people, which was also cool. So you learned a lot. Mm-hmm. Everyone got to speak. It was really comfortable. The place is like a dojo. You take your shoes off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's pretty cool. But yeah, it's a lot like the HTML and CSS. This is an intro to UX design. And I think this is the same thing that I went to last time. Mm-hmm. Like this is the first Red event I went to, but this was months ago, right?
Okay, cool. So that sounds pretty fun. And that's 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. We also have over at 433 West Pender, that's the Jaggers downtown location, from 6 to 8 p.m., Ladies That UX Vancouver. And this is going to be the topic of the night is UX research methods, personas. So that should be pretty fun. I would bring a laptop out to that personally, but see how it goes. Let us know how it was.
Yeah, cool.
And Thursday, we also have quite a few events. So we have Vancouver Pixel Crafters has the startup drinks. This is actually, I noticed today, one of the reasons I had a really hard time before finding startup drinks was because people always said, oh, do you go to startup drinks? I had no idea what it was or where to find it. That's always posted under the Vancouver Pixel Crafters meetup.
Yeah.
So that made that a little bit easier. Anyway, that's over at Water Kitchen and Bar, 131 Water Street. At 6 p.m., just go upstairs. There should be people there. Feel free to bring your laptop if you have something to show.
Mm.
But otherwise, I would just show up, have some drinks, and be ready to talk.
Mainly networking, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was pretty chill. So Vancouver, this is an awesome meetup, I think. They're pretty big.
Yeah.
They have some really interesting topics and very well organized, I think, as well.
Speaking of Git, this one's called A Introduction to Feature Development and Deployment with GitHub and Travis CI.
Yeah, so this is going to be pretty awesome, I think. That's 1401 West 8th Avenue, Vancouver.
That's at the Trinimbus HQ.
Yeah, and we also have this Vancouver Sales Salesforce Developer Group. Can you tell us a little bit about that, James?
Yeah, that's the, it's called Using Microservice Architecture to Design Apex Triggers. So this is all sort of lingo in the Salesforce world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're into that or you're looking to get into Salesforce, which is a massive tool that's used by tons of companies, this would definitely be a good place to check out, as well as networking with different people, because there is food and drinks there too.
Yeah, so that seems food and drinks and great networking, and it should be pretty fun.
So the next one is the Vancouver Robot Operating Systems User Group Meetup.
Yeah, I don't know what that's going to be like. I've never used a robot operating system, but it should be pretty interesting if you're into that.
Have you used an Arduino before?
Possibly, but not much.
Yeah, I don't see it listed on here, so maybe that doesn't count as a robot.
I'm not really sure. It might be interesting to go out there and check out what they're actually up to. Unfortunately, if you're not a member, you don't get to see the location. If you are a member, you get to see the location, and that's from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday. Next up, we have Saturday, April 2nd. There's that Hacking Health design challenge. You know what? I saw this as well, and I didn't even think it would be worth putting in. What do you think of that, James?
Well, I saw it, and it was a little bit confusing because the logo shows June 5th to 8th, mm-hmm. but this is the start of it. It's an eight-week challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It includes people that are technical, non-technical, all over the place. I thought it was really cool to do, like, hackathons are always fun, and it's always fun to build something and make something, especially mm-hmm. when at least something that's over 1 or 2 days, it's a lot of crunch time and 24-hour work periods,
yeah.
Whereas this is over a greater amount of time. I feel like you get better outcome.
Yeah, I think you might be right. It also has a pretty cool theme, I think. Health.
Yeah.
Hacking health. It should be pretty fun. I guess it would be worth it. There is a fee associated, something like $250.
Okay. And then on Sunday, I found another one called Neurotech Van Launch Event.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually the group logo sort of says the International Neurotechnology Network from Hackers to Experts.
Okay, and where is that, James?
That's actually at the Wayne and William White Engineering Design Building, or Design Center, 235 East Mall, which is actually in UBC.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the campus there. East Mall is one of the big streets there in the campus.
Really far.
Yeah, it's kind of far.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one is pretty cool. It's about neurotechnology, of course, and mm-hmm. neural nets. So if you're into that sort of thing, check it out.
That does sound pretty interesting. All right, and that's the week in meetups.
All right, and we're here with Zeeshan Hayat from Kudo Life. Hello, Zeeshan.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Hi, Zeeshan. So tell us a little bit about Kudo Life.
Well, Kudo Life is a health and fitness app, mm-hmm. and what we do with our app is we allow users to track their calories.
Mm-hmm.
We allow them to log their calories, and the concept is really calories in, calories out.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your calories coming in through what you're consuming on a regular basis, the food that you consume, and then your calories going out, which is what you're burning throughout your normal day.
Mm-hmm.
So how's this different from something like I have a Fitbit here, and I can track my food, I can track my activity. How's it different from something like a Fitbit or some of these other like Apple Watch applications?
Well, I think the biggest differentiator between us and Fitbit would be that we don't need a wearable device. So we created
okay.
our own machine learning algorithms
nice.
And AI around logging your calories as well as burning your calories. So we can track your walk, run, cycle, where have you been in terms of, you know, throughout driving your day around the day and all of that without having to actually wear a wearable device.
So you're saying the phone is the thing that acts as the wearable device, quote unquote. As long as you have your phone on you, it can track your activity.
That's what our technology does, yes.
Okay, cool. So machine learning is pretty awesome, pretty hip right now. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how that sort of integrates with the actual tracking. So where's the machine learning come in?
So, yeah, it was a challenge, to be frank and honest with you, especially because our whole mandate was that we wanted to be the platform for mm-hmm. tracking, your devices as well. So we will integrate
mm-hmm.
in the future with, some of, the larger, companies like maybe Fitbit, but,
okay.
And that's mainly to capture the audience that already exists with Fitbit. But the whole idea of machine learning started from basically not wanting to be part of any wearable devices and being able to use the sensors in the phone that you already have, that you already carry everywhere
okay.
you go, to be able to track your activities.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual device itself, the activity that happens on the device triggers It passes through a machine learning algorithm, and the machine learning can tell you what you're actually doing.
That's right. So we do activity detection through the device sensors. So there are many algorithms that we put together to start determining. And, you know, that process took 6 to 9 months. I mean, it was not easy. There's nothing out there that already exists and says, hey, this is what you do. And here's a code.
Right.
If you replicate this, your app is going to start tracking your activities. So we had to look at a lot of research. Papers out of Stanford and MIT and even UBC and consult with people. But we do have a really good team that was able to put that together. And, you know, we started to see. But we again, had lots of challenges, like battery life was an issue at once. And, you know, we were able to detect cycling and running, but walking was an issue. But and then once we fixed walking, cycling became an issue. So it was it was you know, it was a lot of fun, to be honest, because the whole team, we have like 20 people, you know, getting out there testing and helping us put out a model and see how it performs, and then finding the issues, and then going back to our developers and engineers, and you know, working on those problems. So
So why don't you tell us a little bit actually about the team? How did you get people together? How's the hiring process?
So you know, Kudu Life is a project of Prism Media. So the team has been there since the beginning, but obviously we've grown the team for specific reasons and hiring for specific positions to help us with this particular project. I mean, the hiring process has been a fun one, and growing the culture, I think, is been are one of our biggest accomplishments in our company. Being able to, you know, have people come into an environment where it's fun. And I think especially hiring for tech has been easier for us, just because we're working on a very innovative, cool project, which involves machine learning and AI and you know, activity tracking, and people love, you know, being part of
the project.
That process
attracts talent.
It definitely does. Yeah.
I worked in a company where the CEO kind of called himself the keeper of the culture. And I thought that was a really interesting, interesting title. And it worked really well, in my opinion. The culture was amazing. But how do you keep the culture?
I think that's exactly it. You know, it is the CEO is in charge of that. Mm-hmm. He is the gatekeeper. Right. And for us, it's been more or less, you know, providing the opportunity for people to do what they excel at. Mm-hmm. So really, you know, because we're a small team, we are a startup. Mm-hmm. It allows our team to be able to be in a position where they can, you know, decide what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And we see what they do best, and then just sort of, you know, walk them into that position. Mm-hmm. So people do wear multiple hats, and we do pull long hours, and we are, you know, a team that is you know, working in one direction together. So yeah, it does resonate with us as well.
Sounds like a lot of the kind of the good parts of being a startup, having that small team, having many hats, and kind of really feeling that ownership on a project, and every person's contribution has their own signature, but also that comes together to be part of the whole. So that's really interesting. How tell us a little bit more about this Prism Media, maybe some of the other projects you have, and then also Kudu Life. How did you come up with the idea for this?
So Prism Media is a lead generation technology company that works specifically in the healthcare industry. So what we do is we generate leads for healthcare providers, mail order pharmacies, and durable medical equipment providers. And our main focus is in diabetic supplies. So we help connect diabetic patients with mail order pharmacies that ship their supplies to them, so that they have them ahead of time, and they typically do it on 3-month basis. And we do that online marketing through you know, social media, search, that's probably a couple of the top ones that we utilize online. And then to verify information, because we're working in the healthcare industry, it's highly compliant, and more verification is needed. So once someone's expressed interest in speaking to a diabetic specialist, we then call that patient back and re-verify all their contact information, their insurance information. And once they're fully qualified and all the requirements of our clients meet, that's when we transfer that patient over to our clients. Okay. And then they do their inside sales and roll that patient in and basically start supplying them with their diabetic supplies. Mm-hmm. So Cuda Life came, you know, from, it stemmed from that idea because we've been dealing with diabetic patients for now a good part of 8 years. Mm-hmm. We realized that, you know, the problem of diabetes is enormous.
Right.
About 12% of U.S. population is already diagnosed. So that's about 30 million people. Right. That's the size of Canadian population.
Right.
Yeah. And similarly, Vancouver, or sorry, Canada has about the same amount of people that are also diagnosed, about 10%. And of the total population.
Mm-hmm.
But what was more intriguing to find out was that, you know, another 30% of U.S. population, and similarly here in Canada, is actually also in pre-diagnosed of diabetes stage.
Right.
So the pre...
And that's huge.
That's huge because that's about 150 million people just in the United States.
Right.
And that is very close. So when we looked at, you know, diabetes, I came to find out that I'm also a pre-diabetic. And a pre-diabetic is anyone that is over the age of 35 and has diabetes in their family, or if they're overweight and don't exercise a lot, and you look fine. You know, I think it was an interesting point where we found ourselves in a place where we said, okay, well, we're helping people get their diabetic supplies because some of these people that we talk to, they're elderly. They don't, you know, they live maybe 20 miles away from the closest pharmacy. They can't, they don't have a way to get to the pharmacy to pick up their supplies.
Mm-hmm.
But we really need to help them. And we want to, our goal became that, you know, we want to help prolong or prevent this onset of this disease called diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we started looking into, you know, well, what causes diabetes? And weight loss is one of the biggest factors, and not being active is another.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Cuda Life came about. And it was really to meant for adhering purposes as well at first, so that, you know, we walk our users that we're already qualifying as diabetic into this app so that they can start, you know, losing weight. Because we started surveying our database and found that, you know, 40% of the total people that are diabetic are also overweight.
Mm-hmm.
So it all made sense for us to, at that point, you know, move into this direction.
Right.
And I think it also plays a very strategic role for our future in terms of what we're looking to do for growth purposes.
Absolutely. So a really interesting part of that as well, so you mentioned machine learning, and you've also mentioned health data, and you've got a database of health information both for diabetic patients and then I suppose anybody who's using Cuda Life.
That's right.
So do you have machine learning algorithms kind of running over those databases? What would those look like? What kind of information are we getting from that? And then also, I guess everyone's quite concerned with their own personal health data. This seems to be something that's really interesting.
Yeah,
people want this to be private.
Yeah.
And something that I've heard, I think it was the BC Dev Exchange were saying that they did a survey in the UK, and it was something like, you know, how many people want the government to have their data? And everyone was like, no, I don't want that to happen. The government actually has this data. And then how many people would like, you know, doctors to have access to this data? And everyone was like, oh yeah, we'd like that to happen. So it's funny because the doctors don't always have access and the government often does. So big question there.
Yeah.
How do you ensure that the data is secure? Do you work with other companies or the government for open data? And does that help? And then the other thing, from a developer point of view or machine learning, what sort of machine learning takes place there?
So let's work backwards. In terms of the machine learning algorithms that we have put in place, so one of the newest features that we're going to be pushing very soon here, we just actually came up with meal plans.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we heard our customers and users say, well, one of the biggest problems we have with losing weight is that we don't know what to eat.
Right.
Yeah, sure, there's lots of apps. It's a saturated market. It is a hot topic.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of apps that give you the option of logging meals, but they don't tell you. You know, they'll give you how many calories you can consume in a day, but they won't tell you what you should consume within those calories
right.
to be healthy. That's why the first thing we did recently, which actually just got launched 2 days ago in the App Store, was a 7-day meal plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's customized to your likings. And so you go through a survey path and you mm-hmm. tell us, you know, what you like, what you don't like,
awesome.
What you may be allergic to, et cetera, et cetera. And then we come up with a meal plan for 7 days that is within your caloric budget.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. And then with that, the next step is that we're going to start tracking glucose levels.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to allow our users to start logging their glucose levels.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be tracking through machine learning algorithms which food items that you're consuming is spiking your glucose levels or dropping them.
Right.
When you may have too much of a gap in between mm-hmm. where you haven't eaten for a long time and your glucose levels drop.
So that actually differs between each person, right? There's some people have a different sensitivity level to these different glucose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Foods. So
yeah.
Both of us, you and I, could be diabetic.
Yeah.
And you eat ice cream
mm-hmm.
and nothing happens.
You're
okay. I eat ice cream and all of a sudden my diabetes spikes, diabetic glucose level spike.
Okay.
So every body is different, and that's really, the bottom line is that we mm-hmm. wanted to customize this whole app to individual bodies,
right.
and you know, how food reacts, to you versus I
mm-hmm.
and yourself.
Right.
Now in terms of, it is a very, touchy, topic as well, because
mm-hmm.
The data is very sensitive,
mm-hmm.
Especially when it's around your medical history. But I think people and users are more receptive now to actually having that data available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the best place for it is in your smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I mean, I just had a blood test at Life Labs. I've done that in the past mm-hmm. years ago. I mean, I sort of go through my yearly, full
checkup. Sort of thing, yeah.
And last year when I did it, I had to wait two hours in the lineup. This year, they had an online appointment setting system set up.
Awesome. Yeah.
So I set my appointment at 10:35. I walked in there at 10:35. At 10:37, I was in. At 10:40, I was out.
Nice.
Wow, nice. Right?
So I think for convenience is a big factor around
yeah.
this. I want to know what's happening in my life, in my body, inside
mm-hmm.
my body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have Life Labs connected to my app, so I don't know. Now what I have to do next is go to my doctor, who's
mm-hmm.
on vacation,
uh-huh.
Wait for him to come back, and then basically mm-hmm. go and meet him and see what my results were like.
Right.
Life Labs would not release those to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to be able to, I would love to be able to see what happened
mm-hmm.
prior to seeing my doctor.
Right.
I mean, they do have a nice description that most people can understand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you know your levels, like what your cholesterol normal levels are and what are they over or under,
mm-hmm.
I could have some gist of understanding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, they might not want to do that.
Right.
For me, I'd like to have that available to me at my discretion.
And it could save, it could save the doctor's time. It can save your time to just have
Absolutely.
That available. And if you wanted to talk about it, then maybe you'd schedule that appointment.
You're almost like removing some of the burden on the healthcare system by taking care of yourself, which is why people like
That's
people right. that are really active and want to subsidize healthy activities, gyms and biking and making that stuff available, as well as making things like unhealthy food and stuff very expensive. They're trying
right,
to drive.
Exactly.
Same with cigarettes. People, the cigarettes every year get an extra tax added on because
mm-hmm.
it actually trickles down to the healthcare system. These people might not be as healthy. They're probably not getting as much exercise. They're smoking a lot. And with Canada, you have universal healthcare in a general sense. So that helps people not go to the waiting room as much, keep those times down.
Absolutely. I think, our budget just came out. It was $29 billion, a lot more than what we had expected. And I think healthcare is a big part of that budget. So
right.
it will help, but we are far away from it as well. Right. You know, there is a adoption period that's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as long as you are continuously growing that way, and I think more millennials that are coming up, they're going to definitely demand it. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. To Absolutely. Jump on the last thing Drew said, how about the open data side? Have you thought about open data, or how does that fit into your business?
Absolutely. We've thought about it. I think we're not there yet, but that is definitely something we intend to do in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So tell us a little bit more about the actual culture at Kudo Life. Where are you located? What's the team like? What would it be like working on the team? And is Kudo Life hiring? Or is that under Prism Media?
So yeah, we do hiring all under Prism Media. Okay. We're located towards close to Canby Corridor, mm-hmm. right next to the SkyTrain, Canada Line. Mm-hmm. The culture, you know, it's getting better and better every day. Uh-huh. We just got a foosball table.
Oh, nice.
We've had like a ping pong table and just got a whole bunch of extra toys. Uh-huh. You know, and just we set up a new smart TV and have everyone access to it and mm-hmm. new sound system and we do a weekly town hall where we do a weekly lunch together with the team, and that is on the company. So we do provide lots of other perks,
right.
Flexible hours. But in this particular town hall, we do a gratitude round. Mm-hmm. So everyone goes around the team and they thank someone, whoever they want, for whatever cool. they did for, mm-hmm. you know, for them last week or the week previous. And, you know, a lot of the thanking came this time. I usually don't get thanked a lot, and I don't mind. I usually thank everyone to be there and for being there and doing what they've been doing. But I got lots of kudos this last lunch.
No pun intended.
And that was because, you know, people are just happy that we were, you know, expanding the, mm-hmm. the company and filling it out. And right. we have room for about, we're a team of about 20 people
right.
Full-time. And mm-hmm. we have another part, you know, five or six people part-time mm-hmm. And consultants. But we have room for about 40 people in our office. So, you know, we're looking to grow that out, and right. people are really happy summer's coming out, so yeah. you know we can open up the back gate and do some barbecues and
nice.
And so it's a good fun environment, and it's grown. It wasn't always like that. We've definitely had our fair share of challenges, but mm-hmm. it's definitely been on the positive side for the last year and a half, 2 years now.
So that sounds pretty. Awesome.
Prism Media is funded through the client services that it provides. How is Kudo Life funded?
Through Prism Media.
Okay, so it's actually self-funded. So that's sort of
it's
a
all
bootstrap.
Self-funded, all bootstrapped. So yeah, we do have some, time left before we actually go out and start raising funds for Kudo Life. Mm. But right now, as it stands, it's been all self-funded, and our idea is that we want to make Kudo Life's revenue positive and drive some serious growth to it before we actually head out there and start raising funds. Cool. We are a profitable company, Prism Media, been around for over 14, 15 years now. I started this while I was still in college, and you know, it's been a great ride. But that allowed us to actually, you know, fuel some of these projects that we had intended for.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So if we wanted to see you or somebody from Prism Media out in the tech scene, what are some meetups or any events that we might find you at, or how would we reach out?
Well, you could catch me at on Twitter at Zeeshan Hyatt, LinkedIn, mm-hmm. Same Zeeshan Hyatt. We are doing a lot of, you know, outreach nowadays in the local tech scene. So we're at some of the local meetup events, as well as BC Tech Summit. We were there. Mm-hmm. There are lots of things happening around town. So.
You're a Hacker Nest, the last Hacker Nest?
I wasn't.
Or you had a team member.
We had presence there. Yeah. And we're probably actually going to sponsor one of mm-hmm. the upcoming Hacker's Nest.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'll be looking forward to having that conversation with you. Yeah. So we have the next Hacker Nest is coming up on Monday. Hope to see you or somebody from
your
team.
Yes, our team is definitely going to be there, most likely myself as well.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
And what about jobs at Kudo Life or Prism Media? Do you have any job openings that you want to plug?
Yes, we do. We're looking for a few of them. So there's a call auditor position that is open right now. That's typically someone who audits our calls for compliance reasons that are generated through leads through our call centers, as well as there is a open position for iOS developer. So we're looking for a front-end iOS developer. We're also looking for a UI UX expert. We are consulting with a new firm that we have recently met. So we'll see how that goes. But that's one expertise that we're actually really missing in our company is someone who's really, you know, drills down on design.
Right. Awesome. Cool. All right. Thanks, Zeeshan.
Yeah, Zeeshan, thanks very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of
VancouverTechPodcast.ca. That's our site. You can actually email us, too, at show@VancouverTechPodcast.ca.
Or find us in the YVR Dev Slack. I'm at Drew.
I'm at James.
We're almost always online.
You can actually get an invite to YVR Dev Slack if you haven't got one already at yvrdev.herokuapp.com.
See you there.
Bye.